All right, while Brother Jim is handing out the notes for tonight, somebody lost their fortune cookie good wish down here on the front of the church, so you can come and get that afterwards. I'll read you the fortune. He who eateth fortune cookies in church. Let you fill in the blank after that, all right? Actually, what I said is better than what it says on here anyways. What people will do, I came in, I think it was yesterday morning, I was coming to the church. And as you know, we have an issue with people that want to use our parking lot as their free-for-all. And we don't mind people parking here other than the fact that once one person does, the next person does, and then they're all in here all the time. We tried, when we moved in here, saying, yes, you could park if you'll be sure you're out in the evenings on Wednesday when we're not here and not here on Sundays. And that didn't work. Their car was left there all the time. So they come up with different excuses and reasons they have to park there. So I pulled in yesterday morning, I think, and they were parked right in the drive pulling in. They're on one side of it, but parked. So they parked on that side. And as I pulled in, right in the front on the dashboard, way over here on the corner to where I could see it, was a big Bible. They'd stuck a Bible on the dashboard. Wait, not just on the dashboard here, but way over so anybody driving in would see it right there. And I got a good chuckle out of that. That's, oh yeah, we won't ask you to move your car now if there's a Bible in it. That's a free pass right there. I went and looked and saw it was an NIV, so I busted the windows out of the car. I'm kidding. You didn't record that, did you, Bill? You didn't record what I just said, did you? Okay. All right, you can start now. The book of Ezra, the 15th book of the Old Testament, the book of Ezra. Do it with me if you can. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, Ezra. All right, the 15th book. We're almost coming up on halfway through the Old Testament, but we're in the book of Ezra, and we have seen that we've got a running commentary going. What started in Genesis was within the beginning, was continued in Exodus with the children of Israel coming out, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, then Joshua leading the children of Israel into the promised land, Judges, the catastrophe that was there, 1 and 2 Samuel leading into 1 and 2 Kings, leading into 1 and 2 Chronicles with some repetition of something, and now we come to the book of Ezra. And the book of Ezra continues the story as it left off at the end of 2 Chronicles. I know we looked at this before, but look at 2 Chronicles. Just turn back one page if you have to from the book of Ezra. 2 Chronicles chapter 36 and verse 22. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. This is a big deal. This is a really big deal. Because Isaiah, all the way back in his book, now, Isaiah comes after Ezra in the Bible, but Isaiah lived before Ezra. All right, in Ezra, we're at 400 and 500 BC. Isaiah was 700 BC. So 200 years before this happens, Isaiah had prophesied it would happen, and Jeremiah had prophesied it would happen, and they even named the name of the guy that was going to make the decree to let the children of Israel go back to Jerusalem. After they'd been taken by Nebuchadnezzar into captivity, and Nebuchadnezzar's son, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belteshazzar, reigned after him, then Cyrus, king of Persia, conquered Belteshazzar and all of Babylonia and let the Jews go back to their land. Before that ever happened, 200 years before that, Isaiah had said, a king named Cyrus will your Lord lift up among you, who will set the people back in their place. The name was given 200 years before he was even born. That's how Bible prophecy works. All right, details like that. The name of a king of a certain country that's going to conquer the world and let the children of Israel go back. That's what we're reading about in verse number 22. We kind of read that verse and think, okay, this is interesting. Man, it's a lot more than interesting. It's miraculous. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, And he made a proclamation throughout all the kingdom and put it also into writing, saying, Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath the Lord God of heaven given me. And he hath charged me to build him a house. This is a heathen king, folks, by the way. This is not a king of, this is not a Jew. This is a heathen king. He hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among of you of all his people? The Lord his God be with him, and let him go up. That's how 2 Chronicles ended. What the Bible does is it brought us all the way up to the 70-year captivity. It brought us up to Nebuchadnezzar coming in, burning down Jerusalem. Burning down Jerusalem. You say literally, did he burn it down? Well, have you watched the news this week? Did you see what happened to the cathedral in Rome? You know, that wasn't destroyed by an atomic weapon. That wasn't destroyed by a bombing of some kind. That was destroyed by fire. In 2019, buildings are still destroyed by fire. We've been studying that in the book of Revelation, that the city of Babylon in chapter 17 and 18 will be destroyed by fire. And again, some Bible commentaries like to get fancy on it and say, well, that's talking about nuclear weapons that destroys it. No, it's going to burn by fire. And so Jerusalem was burned by fire by Nebuchadnezzar, and then the children of Israel went for 70 years into captivity. And here's the thing, for 70 years, silence. After the Bible has been giving us from Genesis a running commentary of everything that happened to the children of Israel, for those 70 years, nothing is spoken, nothing is mentioned, nothing is brought up. Then at the end of the 70 years, Cyrus, king of Persia, makes a decree that the Jews can go back to their homeland, and that's what we read about in 2 Chronicles, and then turn the page or look at Ezra chapter 1. We'll not read it again, but verse 1, 2, and 3 are identical, exactly word for word, what we just read at the end of 2 Chronicles. So Ezra is picking up that return from the captivity and introducing it to us and then running from it from there. So Ezra simply continues the story of the children of Israel. It is the story of the return of the Jews from Babylonian captivity. Now remember, when we say Babylonian captivity, there's the headquarters, the city of Babylon, but Babylonia was a big region. It was a big area. And the Jews that had been taken from Jerusalem had been scattered in all of that area, all of Babylonia. You know that the chief ones, like Daniel and his three friends, were taken straight to Babylon. Those with learning and education, those with potential. But most of the average Jewish people were simply brought out of Jerusalem and left to squander, to squat in different places throughout the whole area, throughout the whole region of Babylonia at that time. And they set down their roots and they began to raise their families and they got their jobs and built their houses and all this stuff went on in captivity, but they were not allowed to worship their God. They were commanded to either worship the gods of Babylonia, the gods of idols and stone and all that, or no gods at all. That's why when you read Isaiah and Jeremiah and they write so strongly about those idols, that's the period of time they're writing at. So we see here that in Ezra, they are now returning from that captivity. And they come in two waves. All right, we'll use some military terms here. Attacking in two waves. They come back from Babylonia. Now that Cyrus says you can go back, now that they have a permit and permission to go back, they come in two waves. First, the return of 50,000 Jews. 50,000 Jews under Zerubbabel, a descendant of David. When Cyrus makes his decree, 50,000 Jews say, we're going to go back. Remember those lists in the Bible that you love reading so much, like chapter 2 and verse number 2, which came with Zerubbabel, here he is, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Sariah, Realiah, Mordecai, this guy, that guy, the other guy, the children of Parash, the children of Sefer, and it gives numbers in there. And actually, if you add those numbers up, I got it here. Down in verse 64 says, the whole congregation together was 42,360. 42,360 Jews from all of Babylonia. You say, that's a lot of Jews. Not out of a million. Not out of all those that were taken into captivity. Only 42,360 said, yes, I want to go back to Jerusalem. Yes, I want to go back and build the house of God. It was a minority. It was a small fraction of all the Jews that went. Then it tells us in verse 65 also, beside their servants, and their maids, of whom there were 7,337. So a total of 49,697. For all you mathematicians, that's how many Jews went back under Zerubbabel. And that account is given to us in chapters 1 to 6. There's a clean division in the book of Ezra. I remember Brother Gitt preaching a message long ago about the man Ezra himself. And here's his book. And he kind of went along this line. Let's read about Ezra. Look at chapter 1. Well, wait a minute. Ezra's nowhere found in chapter 1. Turn to chapter 2. Well, there's no Ezra in chapter... Turn to chapter 3. And he got all the way to chapter 6. And Ezra doesn't show up till chapter 7. The first six chapters are about Zerubbabel. And about the 50,000 Jews by the decree of Cyrus going back into the land. Now, Ezra wrote about it, but he doesn't mention himself because he wasn't part of that. But then secondly, there's the return of 2,000 Jews under Ezra, a descendant of Aaron. And that begins in Ezra chapter 7 and goes from chapter 7 to verse 10. And when you go to chapter 7, chapter 8, you read of the list of all the names of those people that came back with Ezra. And there was 1,900, it's not exactly, I rounded it off to 2,000, 1,816, plus 258 Levites and servants, so a little over 2,000 went back with Ezra. So 50,000 in the first wave went back to Jerusalem. That's talked about in the first six chapters. Then after that, and we'll talk about the time frame in just a minute, about 2,000 go back with Ezra after that. The first wave goes back to build the temple of God. The second wave comes to do service in the temple of God. Ezra is a priest. And so he comes to do the service there. Zerubbabel, what better guy is there to go back to build the city, to build the temple, than a descendant of David? And Ezra is a descendant of Aaron, the high priest, is the one that goes back and begins and restores the worship of God. All right, the two books, and we talked about this already, the book's two sections are chapter 1 to 6 and chapter 7 to 10. And they're marked by two decrees. We're going to see the word decree is key in this book. But it's marked by two decrees. In chapter 1, and we just read this in 2 Chronicles, but it's the same as Ezra chapter 1, verse 1 to 3. In chapter 1, Cyrus, king of Persia, who had just defeated Belshazzar, king of Babylon, makes a decree for all willing Jews to return to Jerusalem to, quote, build the house of God. Again, a heathen king makes a decree because it was prophesied by Isaiah and Jeremiah that the Lord was going to have this done. So this heathen king makes this decree. Once he has broken the Babylonian bondage, he says to the Jews, all of you that want to, go back. In fact, look back there if you would. I like this. Chapter 1 and verse number 3. He says, who is there? Well, the end of verse 2. And he hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem. Verse 3, who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of God. Verse 4, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth. All right, those that were not willing to leave Babylon to go back to Jerusalem. He said, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold, and with goods, and with beasts, beside the freewill offering for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. See, a lot of the Jews had become comfortable in Babylon. They didn't want to go back to Jerusalem. They didn't want to go back. They weren't interested in going back to the house of God, or rebuilding the house of God, or worshiping God. Again, they're in a heathen land where they can't worship the God of Israel. And they weren't even interested in going back. And so Cyrus says, if you're not going to go back, send your money. Bunch of Jewish people, send your money back there. That's what you're staying in the land for, because you've got your businesses running and your bakeries and your jewelry shops. Probably not those, but you've got all this going. If you're not going to go back, then finance the program and send the money to them. It's a great missions message, by the way, right there. Those of us that cannot go or will not go, finance those that do go. And so that's what's going on as the decree of Cyrus is made in chapter 1. Then again, over in chapter 7, we have that, or wait, before we get there, he told them to build the house of God. This they did until opposition halted them, starting in chapter 4 of the book of Ezra. Some opposition comes and they try to get them to stop building the house of God. And when that opposition came, they stopped building, but they turned to building their own houses. They had left everything in Babylon. These 50,000 that had come, they left everything in Babylon, their houses and their lands, their fortunes, to come to Jerusalem. They start building the house of God. The opposition and the decree of another governor says, you've got to stop building that. So they stop and put their attention, therefore, onto building their own houses. Part of the reason they weren't continuing the building was because the decree of the governor, which is going to be overthrown in Ezra by the decree of the king, so they'll go back and rebuild it by chapter 6. But in the meantime, they're building their own houses, and probably that is part of their reluctance to get back to the Lord's work. I know that because look at the book of Haggai. Yes, the book of Haggai. Genesis, Exodus, Haggai. No, it's not there. Near the end of the Old Testament. Near the end of the Old Testament. The prophet Haggai is prophesying during this very time. We could take the book of Haggai and put it right back here in the book of Ezra, because that's when Haggai lived. Notice what he says in his book, if you've got it, in chapter 1. Just jump down to verse number 2. Haggai says this, "Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built." We can't build it. The governor told us to stop. The opposition's too heavy. Verse number 3, "Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord, consider your ways." They were busy building their own houses instead of the house of the Lord. And so Haggai the prophet, and you can read all through the book of Haggai, he's prophesying to Israel at that time in that place and saying, get back to the Lord's work. Get back there and build the Lord's house. The prophet Haggai rebuked them. Then they turned back to building the house of God. And in chapter 6, and I forgot the dots between 6 and 14, didn't I? In chapter 6 and verse 14, "And the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they builded and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia." They got back and they built it. The 50,000 Jews that came back at the decree of Cyrus. Then number 2 in chapter 7. Artaxerxes, this is two kings later, as far as their names recorded in the Bible. There was Cyrus and then Darius and then Artaxerxes. Chapter 7 verse 1, "Now after these things in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia." And it begins to tell us about Ezra. Notice in chapter 7 and verse 27, here is what the commandment was for. "Blessed be the Lord God our fathers, which hath put such a thing in this king's heart," talking about Artaxerxes, "to beautify the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem." All right, the city has not been built. The walls have not been built. That's in Nehemiah, the next book. In Ezra, the first thing they did is get back there and build the temple of God. Before the walls and before the city, Ezra said, Zerubbabel and Ezra said, we got to get this temple of God built. And they got the temple built, and they built the altar. And in chapter 3, I think it is, they start making sacrifices to God. And they get it all done by chapter 6. And then Artaxerxes come along and says, all right, now I want you to take all the treasures of Babylon. Everything that Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of Jerusalem when he destroyed the temple of God, I want you to take all of those treasures back and beautify the house of God. He's restoring the things from chapter 7 through chapter 10. So the two clear divisions and the two waves of folks returning back at that time. The book of Ezra, our next paragraph. The book of Ezra covers 20 years of history in the first 6 chapters. From the decree of Cyrus to the building of the temple, chapter 6 and verse 14, is 20 years. And it's recorded in those 6 chapters. During this time, both Haggai and Zechariah prophesied. We just read that in a verse a moment ago. And wrote their books. So again, at the end of the Old Testament are Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. And those three prophets all prophesied during the time of the going back from the captivity into Jerusalem. The events of the final four chapters, chapters 7 to 10, occur in 1 year's time. All right, when we get to chapter 7, the first six chapters cover 20 years. Chapter 7 to 10 covers 1 year. That's Ezra with the 2,000 coming back. It's interesting when you read chapter 7, and especially chapter 8 of Ezra. Ezra says, all right, I need a bunch of people to go back with me now. Let's beautify. 50,000 are already there. Let's get some more to go. And only 1,816 volunteer. And as Ezra gets ready to march them in there to go beautify the temple of God and serve in it, he looks around and there's no Levites. There's none of those that are dedicated to the service of God. How are they going to go back and beautify the temple of God when only Levites can go into it? So he goes and sends the men out, and he goes out and says, all right, get some of them. And that's where the 258 in chapter 8 and verse 20 come along. They get those 258 Levites to come and help with the temple. So then these 2,000 go back. And everything that happens from chapter 7 to chapter 10 all takes place in 1 year's time. So you say there's 20 in the first six chapters, 1 year. So there's 21 years covered in the book of Esther. But there's a problem. Between chapter 6 and between chapter 7 are 60 years. 60 years where nothing's going on. 60 years where nothing is happening. It's during that 60 years, however, the last line there. However, there is also a 60-year gap between chapter 6 and 7. And it's worth noting that the events of the book of Esther take place during this period of time. In other words, you could take the book of Esther and put it between chapter 6 and 7 of Ezra. Now, that would be very difficult to do in your Bible reading. And that's why the Bible's not laid out that way. But that's when Esther took place. That's why it's after Ezra and Nehemiah. Because it took place in the middle of the book of Esther. In fact, I'll spill the beans ahead of time. That guy Artaxerxes we're reading about here. And we'll see how many times he's mentioned in the book. His name in the book of Esther, that same guy, is not called Artaxerxes. He's called Ahasuerus. It's the same king that brings in Vashti and all that happens. And he gets Esther and gives peace to the Jews and all that kind of stuff. All that happens right here in that 60-year period between Ezra chapter 6 and Ezra chapter 7. The fact that Ezra is the writer of the book is evident. Look here, if you would, in chapter 8 and verse number 15. We know that Ezra is the writer because of his use of the first person pronoun. Chapter 8 and verse 15. The writer of the book says this, "And I gathered them together to the river that runneth to Ahava, and there abode we in tents 3 days, and I viewed the people and the priests, and found there was none of the sons of Levi. Then said I..." For Eleazar, for Ariel, for Shemaiah, go back down to verse 17. "And I sent them with commandment unto Iddo, the chief at the palace of Casiphia. And I told them what they should say unto Iddo and to his brother, the Nethinims," that's the servants in the temple, "and the place of Casiphia, that they should bring unto the ministers the house of God." So the pronoun I used twice in verse 15, verse 16, twice in verse 17. It's down in verse 21, verse 22, verse 24. Verse 26, verse 28, the writer is saying this, and it's evident by the account that that's Ezra. Not only the pronoun I, but also he says me, chapter 8 and verse number 1. "These are now the chief of their fathers, and this is the genealogy of them that went up with me from Babylon in the reign of Artaxerxes the king." And then he uses the pronoun my, chapter 9 and verse number 3. "And when I heard this thing," again the I, "when I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle and plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard and sat down astonied." In verse number 6, "and said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to thee, my God." So Ezra is without a doubt the writer of the book of Ezra. Ezra was a priest by birth, and that's the blank in the middle of the paragraph there. Ezra was a priest by birth. Again, chapter 7, the first 5 verses show us his genealogy. Ezra, the son of Shariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4, verse 5, the son of Abishua, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the chief priest. So by genealogy, he is a Levite. He is one of those that serve in the temple. But he's living in Babylon. What is a servant of the temple going to do in Babylon? Well, there is no temple. There is no church, so to speak. There is no place of worship. They're not allowed to gather together and worship. So he's got nothing to do. Ezra was a priest by birth, but had no place to serve while the Jews were in exile. So he gave himself to the study and teaching of the law of the Lord. Look at chapter 7 and verse number 10. Chapter 7 and verse 10. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. For all those years, for those 70 years in Babylon, and now a good number of years also as Zerubbabel has led them back, but Ezra hasn't gone yet, another 60 years on top of that. He's not been able to do what his calling was had led him to do and his lineage led him to do. So what did he do? He didn't twiddle his thumbs and spend his time in idleness. He got himself familiar. He prepared his heart to seek the law of God and to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. There are times, folks, where God sets us aside. There are times where physically we cannot serve God like we used to serve Him. But that doesn't mean we can't still serve Him. That means we still prepare our heart to seek God. We don't know what the Lord might do with us even after that point. There have been some folks that late in life accomplished some great and wonderful things for God because they didn't quit and didn't give up. Ezra could have said, I'm a son of Aaron, but here I am in a heathen land where they don't even worship the right God and there's nothing but idols around and the Jewish people aren't interested in the law of Moses. I might as well just pack my bags and forget about the whole thing. But he gave himself for all those years diligently to the study of the Word of God and the teaching to those that would hear. He taught the people around him. He was, it says in verse number 6, I think it's verse 6. Yes, it was in verse number 6. This Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses. Why was he a ready scribe? Because he'd prepared his heart to seek after God. Ezra prepared himself so that when the time came, he was ready to be used of God. Some key words or phrases in Ezra. And again, the reason we look at these is these always kind of accentuate to us what the book is about. The phrase, the house of the Lord, appears 8 times in the book of Ezra. You say, well, that's not a lot of times. Well, there's only 10 chapters. And that's a lot of times percentage-wise for that one book to emphasize the house of the Lord. Well, how about this? The phrase, the house of God, appears 17 times in just these 10 chapters. 17 times. That's the emphasis, the house of the Lord, the house of God. That's what they're going back to build. It's been destroyed for 70 long years, and Cyrus gives them permission to rebuild it. The word or the name of the city, Jerusalem, appears 47 times in the 10 chapters. Jerusalem, back to Jerusalem. We've got to get back to Jerusalem. That was in the hearts of the people. The name Artaxerxes, and there's the king that we talked about, appears 12 times. That's significant because his name only appears 15 times in all the Bible. One in Chronicles before this and twice in Nehemiah after it. But Artaxerxes by this name 12 times, and again, this is Ahasuerus that we'll read about later in the book of Esther. Then the word decree, a key word, appears 9 times in the book of Ezra. Some of those decrees are bad decrees. The governor, Tatnai, makes a decree to stop them from building. And when the Jews go to Tatnai and say, hey, the king allowed us to do this, then he sends messengers back to the king and says, see if this is true. And they look in the records and they don't find any record of it. He gets all puffed up behind the ears and everything and thinks he's got the power. And then they find a different writing from that day in the palace that did have the decree in it. That's why the decree is mentioned so many times. That did have the decree. And Tatnai, who's the one, the governor that wanted to shut it down, they find the king's decree and he has to be the one that provides lumber and timber and wood for the building of it when he was the one that tried to oppose it and shut it down. That's how God works. Taking his very enemies to praise him. So the word decree appears 9 times. Now let's look at the overview of Ezra. This is a good outline just to give us an overview of what's going on here. Number one, again, the first 6 chapters are the 2 divisions, are chapters 1 to 6 and 7 to 10. And the first 6 chapters talk about the restoration under Zerubbabel. The restoration. They're going to rebuild the temple and the house of God. They're going to rebuild the altar and reinstitute the worship of God. The restoration under Zerubbabel. Chapter 1, the king proclaiming. The king proclaiming. I, Cyrus, make a proclamation. He made a proclamation that all the Jews were free to go back, that were willing. That's the key word both times in both decrees. Those that are willing. Those that want to go back. He didn't force the Jews to go back, but those that were willing. That's what God's looking for, those that are willing. God never forces anybody to do anything. If it's not with a willing heart, he doesn't want it. So there's the king proclaiming in chapter 1. Letter B, the people reclaiming. The people reclaiming, chapters 2 and 3. The people reclaiming. In chapter 2 again, we read all those genealogies. They're reclaiming their tribes. They've been scattered. They don't know to whom they belong. And many of the names that are listed, many of them are listed by families, and some don't even know their genealogy, who they came from. So they're trying to reclaim their genealogy. In chapter 3, they reclaim their theology. They set up the altar. They begin making their sacrifices. They return to the worship of their God that they haven't done for 70 long years. They reclaim their worship. The king proclaiming, the people, reclaiming. Letter C, the devil defaming. Defaming. D-E-F-A-M-I-N-G. And again, that's where the devil puts in the heart of the opposition, Tatnai and the others, to try to stop the Jews from building it. He calls them. One of that, the Jews, the enemies say, that, I'm reading chapter 4 and verse 15, that search may be made in the books of the records of thy fathers, so shalt thou find in the book of the records, and know that this city, talking about Jerusalem, is a rebellious city. And hurtful unto kings and provinces, and that they have moved sedition within the same of old time, for which cause was this city destroyed. The devil defames Jerusalem and the place of worship and gets the temple construction stopped. Then letter D, the Lord sustaining. The Lord sustaining. The Lord overrules Tatnai, the governor, gets the decree discovered, and as we saw in chapter 6 and verse number 14, they builded and finished it. The Lord sustained the restoration under Zerubbabel. And then number 2, the reforms under Ezra. The reforms under Ezra. Zerubbabel of the seed of David gets the city built, but it's Ezra of the chief priest Aaron that reforms the morality of the people and gets them back in line. In chapter 7, we read about the man. Chapter 7 is about the man. Chapter 7 is all about Ezra, what he does, what he says. Ezra prepared his heart to seek the Lord and to do the law and to teach in Israel and his statutes and judgments. We learn about the man in chapter 7. We see the movement in chapter 8. The movement, again, that's the numbering of the people that go from Babylon with Ezra back into Jerusalem. Then in 9 and 10, Don't put your papers away too quick. You see the mistake. Chapters 9 and 10 tell us about the mistake. Yes, that's the end of the outline. But let me tell you what the mistake was in chapter 9 and 10. When they came back from Babylon, these Jewish men had married Babylonian wives and now brought them back to the holy city of Jerusalem. They'd married women that was forbidden by the law of Moses for them to marry. Those that worshiped the heathen gods. Those that weren't Jews by birth and lineage and descent. And so it's a problem because God's not going to bless them with these heathen women. You remember that happened once back in the book of Joshua already. God's not going to bless them there. So Ezra, God bless his fortitude. Chapter 10 and verse 10. And Ezra the priest stood up and said unto them, ye have transgressed and have taken strange wives to increase the trespass of Israel. Now therefore make confession unto the Lord God of your fathers and do his pleasure and separate yourselves from the people of the land and from the strange wives. And we get a listing starting down in verse number 20 of all the men that put away their wives because they had married heathen and strange wives. And it says in verse 44, all these had taken strange wives, and some of them had wives by whom they had children. There's 113 names listed from verse 20 to verse number 43. 113 names of men listed that had married strange wives and had had children by them. And now if they want to worship God, they have to separate from their families. That's a rough thing to do, isn't it? But you can't blame God. They weren't supposed to have those wives in the first place. They weren't supposed to be reproducing children from heathen women in the first place. We always want to look at the result and then blame that. And not blame the cause for it. Not blame the man in his error and the person and what he does. So Ezra straightens out the mistake of the children of Israel so that the story of Israel can go on. So that God will send that Messiah and that Redeemer because he's got to come. He's got to come from a Jewish heritage. He's got to come from Mary and Joseph. Now, they don't know the names or the people, but it's got to be two Jewish people. And it's not going to happen if the Jews are marrying the Babylonians and the worshipers of false gods and all the things of the heathen. So God is trying to keep his line straight, and he works through the priest Ezra to reform the people. That's the book of Ezra. Next time we'll get in the book of Nehemiah. Let's stand together this evening with our wagons loaded and our minds overloaded.